Do you want more true crime bedtime stories? Sign up to Bonus Bedtime Stories on Apple Podcasts today to access early and ad-free episodes. Subscribers will also get an exclusive bonus episode each month. But for now, get comfortable and enjoy tonight's episode.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to True Crime Bedtime Stories. In today's episode, we're delving into the harrowing story of Kimberly Cates. We'll paint a picture of an idyllic New England life in Mount Vernon, New Hampshire, shattered in a night of unspeakable terror. We'll uncover the chilling events that took place in the early hours of October 4th, 2009, when a mother and her young daughter faced an unimaginable attack within the supposed safety of their own home. As we navigate through the night's harrowing details, we'll pay tribute to the strength and courage of surviving daughter Jamie, whose actions in the wake of tragedy were nothing short of heroic. Then, we'll step by step follow the ensuing investigation that brought the assailants to justice, unraveling a web of malice that led to the doorstep of the Cates family. Kimberly and David Cates' journey to Mount Vernon was like a breath of fresh air after the clamor of city life. They sought a picturesque setting, a place where community spirit replaced the anonymity of the urban sprawl. With the New England charm wrapped around them, the couple installed an alarm system in their new home, a testament to their prudence, especially with young Jamie in tow. The initial days in Mount Vernon passed as they had dreamed. The family was embraced by the scenic beauty and the close-knit community, and the impression of risk gradually diminished. For a while, nights were filled with peace, and the days with the gentle hustle of country life. It was a life in which alarm systems seemed more a formality than a necessity. The Cates relaxed into their new environment, the nagging fears of crime lingering in the city, shadows they had left behind. However, life has a way of unraveling the most carefully laid plans. Beneath the tranquility of Mount Vernon lay a grim possibility that the Cates, despite their precautions, had not foreseen. Imagine the shock that bolted through the neighborhood when the sanctity of the Cates' home was breached. It was a night like any other, a night when the quaintness of a New England town was horribly juxtaposed against a scene so gruesome it would rip through the fabric of any community. For the Cates family, what began as a tranquil evening would spiral into a nightmare of unspeakable violence. In the wee hours of October 4th, 2009, the silence in the Cates household was shattered. Kimberly Cates was suddenly awoken by the intrusion of a dim light cutting through the darkness, a confusion that was met not with answers, but sheer brutality. 36 devastating strikes from a machete were dealt by an intruder, each a barbaric blow to the unsuspecting mother, harmlessly tucked into her bed. Beyond the savage assault with the machete, Kimberly was mercilessly stabbed multiple times, a secondary assailant leaving his own mark. Amidst her mother's screams, 11-year-old Jamie was jolted from her sleep. The terror that unfolded was one that words can hardly serve justice. As she tried to escape, a knife-wielding shadow halted her, unleashing 18 stabs across her young body. She was wounded in her chest, her arms, her legs, her back, each strike a potential death sentence. The violence escalated to the point that Jamie was thrown across the room in a desperate attempt by the assailant to escape her grasp, resulting in her collision with a glass door. In their deluded minds, the killers presumed they had successfully snuffed out the life of both mother and daughter. As they proceeded to plunder the residence, scrambling for valuables in a pathetic afterthought of their primary aim, Kimberly and Jamie were left to bleed out. Yet the fortitude of the young Jamie became the single thread holding on to life's fabric. Once they fled into the night, the false shroud of calm descended upon the house again. But lying amidst the carnage, the 11-year-old summoned a strength well beyond her years. Despite the agonizing pain and the shock from her multiple wounds, Jamie managed that miraculous movement. She crawled to the kitchen and dialed for help, her voice a faint whisper reporting the atrocity to the 911 dispatcher before her body yielded to exhaustion on the cold kitchen floor. The savagery of the attack was a stark reflection of the darkness that can reside in the hearts of men, a darkness that enacted itself upon the Cates with a ferocity that had no place in the sleepy town of Mont Vernon, or anywhere else in the world. This act of evil, this shattering of innocence, would mark the beginning of a journey through a heart-rending saga of pain, courage, justice, and ultimately the resilience of the human spirit. It was Jamie's instinct, perhaps that innate human drive, that flicker of hope even in the bleakest of moments, that roused her. With assailants gone, thinking they had left no witnesses behind, it was a delicate window of time. A critical moment where silence was both an enemy and an ally, and Jamie, with strength that belies her tender years, made her move. Dialing 911, her voice, barely a whisper, broke through the early morning stillness, a stark contrast to the nightmare that had unfolded just moments before. "Someone killed my mother," she mustered. Few words, yet they carried the weight of her stark reality, and with that, time seemed both to speed up and stand still. As Jamie collapsed, her mission accomplished, the world outside began to spin into motion. The first responder's arrival pierced the early dawn. An officer found Jamie, her small frame an amalgam of innocence and trauma, her spirit unfathomable. The young survivor was a study in contrasts, grievously injured yet acutely aware, her life hanging by a thread, but her lucidity in recounting the events stunning. Paramedics, upon confirming the worst for Kimberly, shifted all focus to saving the life that still clung so desperately to hope. An ambulance became a beacon of survival as it ferried Jamie to the aid she urgently required. The grim silence of the crime scene in the early hours following the brutality visited upon Kimberly and Jamie Cates was palpable. Investigators donned gloves and set about the tough task of piecing together a night of incomprehensible violence. Detectives and forensic experts moved through the rooms meticulously, documenting every detail. The blood pattern spoke volumes. In one area, indicative of Kimberly's desperate fight for life, in another, pointing to the assailant's frantic search for valuables. Every collected piece of evidence, every fiber, every fingerprint would be crucial in knitting together a narrative that had ended in tragedy. Outside the walls of the crime scene, the tight-knit community struggled to grapple with the fact that such evil had walked among them. It was inconceivable that, in a town where neighbors knew each other's names and crime was a stranger, such wanton cruelty could exist. The quiet, picturesque setting was shattered, replaced by the echo of sirens and the low murmur of law enforcement at work. But amidst the gloom, a small miracle was unfolding. Jamie, though grievously wounded, was the linchpin, a witness who had survived against all odds, proving that even in the darkest moments, resilience can bloom. Her account would eventually guide the hands of those seeking justice, leading them to the very doorstep of the culprits. The timeline began to clarify as the investigators methodically traced the steps of the intruders. From the getaway patterns suggested by tire tracks to the point of entry, likely through a window with a displaced air conditioning unit, everything was gathered and scrutinized. Each shard of glass, each drop of blood, each mark left on the walls of the Cates home would serve as silent testimony to the events of that fateful night. And while the authorities worked, the community held its breath, clinging to hope that justice would soon be served, that the heart of Mont Vernon would find peace once more. The story of Kimberly and Jamie Cates was becoming a rally cry, a call for unwavering determination in the face of unspeakable acts. As the day dawned and turned into evening, the investigation pressed on, tireless and unyielding. The very arrogance that emboldened these killers to commit such heinous acts would become the unraveling of their meticulously laid plans. It began with Stephen Spader and Christopher Gribble's ill-conceived decision to involve their friend Autumn Savoy in their cover-up. After the monstrous display of savagery, they thought nothing of arriving at Savoy's doorstep, hands still bloody, as they boasted about the terror they unleashed on Kimberly and her daughter, Jamie. Little did they know, Savoy's compliance masked a reluctant heart. When push came to shove, the loyalty among thieves proved thinner than blood. The sun had yet to rise on that dreadful day when the trio discarded their blood-stained clothes and the modest bounty of jewelry they managed to pilfer, casting them into the currents of the Nashua River. This act marks not the clean slate they intended, but the beginning of the end. Spader and Gribble, with the folly of youth and the recklessness of those unacquainted with guilt, retreated to the sanctity of their homes. Their heads hit their pillows with the misguided confidence of evading the long arm of the law. But fate, as it often does, intervened. The echoes of their gruesome tales found their way to the walls of their friend Kyle Fenton's home. Cocksure and brash, they laid out their night's work without a whiff of doubt, not realizing that their words, like dark seeds, were sown in the soil of justice. Kyle's mother, a silent witness to the pair's confessions, took swift action. Her moral compass unwavering, she placed the call that would pivot the case on its axis. As the day dragged on, the net began closing. Witnesses, once friends and acquaintances of Spader and Gribble, one by one, stepped forward to recount the chilling brags of murder most foul. Their morbid declarations, meant to instill fear and command respect, instead opened the floodgates and the authorities were waiting with bated breath. The chains of fate clanked their heavy burden as officers descended upon the killers, sweeping them into custody with a rigor that matched the brutality of their crime. Together with their accomplices, William Marks and Quinn Glover, they watched as their world of mock invincibility crumbled, interrogation rooms replaced thrones of delusion, and questions surfaced like daggers, tearing at the fabric of their shared nightmare. As the hours dwindled, so too did their masquerade of innocence. Each haunted by the reflection of their deeds, their narratives diverged, a symphony of blame and denial that would soon fall on deaf ears. For Marks, Glover, and Savoy, the shadow of that evening would stretch into the confines of a prison cell. For Spader and Gribble, the unforgiving gaze of justice marked the end of their campaign of terror. And for the town of Mont Vernon, the swift action of its people and law enforcement stood as a testament to the resolve that evil deeds would not go unpunished, a tribute to the spirit of the Cates family and their everlasting place in the heart of a community that rose, unwavering, from the darkest of nights.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
The interrogation rooms became stages for a morbid theater. When Steven Spader and Christopher Gribble were brought in for questioning, airing their twisted confessions like a badge of honor, they coolly described the savage assault on Kimberly and Jamie Cates, their voices lacking any semblance of regret or human emotion. You see, Spader fancied himself a leader of sorts, forging what he termed the Disciples of Destruction with his misfit followers, Gribble, William Marks, and Quinn Glover. There's a haunting air to how these young men, with admiration for killers woven into their disturbed fantasies, pledged their loyalty to Spader's command. They committed to a pact that escalated from idle chatter to unspeakable acts, culminating in the night that brought ruin to the Cates household. During his confession, Spader wore his malevolence like a crown, his sole annoyance being the botched attempt by his crew that left young Jamie alive, a mistake that led to their capture. His narrative of the night's events was laced with a perverse pride as he recounted the blows he dealt with his machete, indifferent to the groans of anguish he elicited from his victims. Gribble, with a chilling calmness, likened his methodical stabs to plotting items on a shopping list. It was alarming how he rued not ensuring Jamie's death, not for any trace of pity, but rather, in his grotesquely twisted logic, to spare her the agony of growing up without a mother. The interrogation revealed a man detached from the essence of humanity, a so-called gentleman whose savage inclinations ran deep and dark. To hear Gribble describe his actions was to peer into the void of a soul where empathy and compassion had never taken root. Displaying grotesque arrogance, Gribble saw himself as untouchable. In his fantastical worldview, prison was but a minor inconvenience, a new realm to conquer and intimidate. His statement in court was nothing short of bone-chilling, unabashedly aware of his own predisposition to kill again, if ever released. Interrogators were faced with not just the confessions, but with the brazen reality of how these young men had assembled under a banner of violence, and how their yearning for notoriety and dominion over life itself propelled them into an abyss that most fear to even imagine. It was an unflinching look into a concoction of personalities: Spader, the leader craving validation through terror, and Gribble, the eager participant in horror, each a stark embodiment of unyielding malevolence. As the details of the confessions unfurled, the grim tableau illustrated just how deeply ingrained their callous disregard for life had become. The confessions were not just admissions of guilt. They were testaments to the chilling capacity for evil that resides within certain corners of humanity. a stark reminder that sometimes the monsters we fear most are all too real and hide not in the shadows, but within the souls of the young and outwardly unassuming. The convictions of these cold-hearted perpetrators, unfolded against the somber backdrop of a courtroom, each detail more harrowing than the last. The trials marked a definitive chapter in this gruesome saga, as the heinous actions of Stephen Spader, the instigator and ringleader, and his accomplices were laid bare for the world to see. Spader seemed to display his depravity like a badge of honor throughout his trial. This was a young man who, despite growing up in a loving, adoptive family, had veered catastrophically off the moral compass and reveled in the terror he had unleashed. Here was someone who saw the killing of Kimberly Cates, not as the monstrous act it was, but as a crowning achievement of his malevolence. The courtroom heard the chilling words of Spader's own declaration, noting how many times he had mercilessly struck Kimberly with the machete, recounting her agonized reactions with a sense of pride rather than the horror such deeds rightfully deserved. But it wasn't just Spader's testimony that turned stomachs and caused courtroom attendees to recoil. William Marks and Quinn Glover provided damning testimonies of their own in a desperate bid for leniency. Glover's especially was heart-wrenching, recounting his cowardly withdrawal to muffle the victim's screams with his hands pressed against his ears instead of intervening to stop the attack. The verdict was as inevitable as it was welcome. With overwhelming evidence and testimonies against him, Stephen Spader was found guilty on all counts. Marks, Glover, and Savoy, too, faced the consequences of their actions in varying degrees, a clear message of no tolerance for such gratuitous violence. Perhaps the most poignant moment was when the trial judge told an unrepentant Spader that he belonged in a cage. Not a single trace of remorse was found in him when he was handed a life sentence without the possibility of parole, perhaps a small consolation to a community irreversibly scarred by his actions. Then there was the case of Christopher Gribble, seen by some as even more sinister than Spader, if that were even possible. His trial was a spectacle of the disturbing psyche of a man who had harbored violent tendencies since childhood. Gribble's twisted revelations during the proceedings left onlookers and even seasoned officials aghast. Ultimately, Spader refused to participate in an appeal that would benefit from changes to the law regarding life sentences for juveniles, showcasing a disturbing level of contentment with his dreaded existence within prison walls. Gribble, on the other hand, attempted to escape justice by claiming ignorance of his rights during his confession, but his appeal fell on deaf ears. His life sentence without parole was upheld, ensuring that this gentleman, as he had mockingly described himself, would never again walk free among us. In a complex tapestry of justice and moral reckoning, these trials and the resulting convictions not only closed the chapter on this tragic case, but also served as a grim reminder of the evil that can lurk in the human heart. Yet it is through the strength of the legal system and the unyielding pursuit of justice that we find closure, if not solace, in the knowledge that those who commit such heinous acts are held to account. The trials had ended and the verdicts were in, but the story of the Mount Vernon horror was far from over. The sentencings that were meant to close this chapter brought about unexpected developments and a societal reflection on justice for crimes committed by minors. Stephen Spader, the ringleader of the darkness that descended upon the Cates home, was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole, only to have his sentence reviewed due to changes in law regarding juvenile offenders. Yet, in a turn as bizarre as his crimes, Spader chose not to seek a reduced sentence, claiming to be content in his current state. A most sick and twisted individual, by his own admission. The wheels of justice continued to turn, and his sentence got recalibrated to life plus 76 years despite his disinclination to appeal. In 2013, the doors of any possible freedom firmly shut as he ordered his attorneys to drop all appeals, resigning himself to live out his days behind bars in New Jersey. Christopher Gribble, the man whose cold testimony sent shivers through the courtroom, took the opposite tack. He appealed his life sentence, claiming a lack of understanding of his rights, though evidence and a recording of his willing confession told a different story. His attempt to spin the narrative fell flat, and the appeal was denied. Gribble now lives the consequence of his actions separated from society, isolated even within prison walls due to his vulnerability to other inmates' aggression and the notoriety of his crimes. For Jamie Cates and her father, David, life had to find a way to resume, however changed. They continued to live in the house on Trow Road, finding solace in their memories of Kimberly and each other. As a testament to their strength, they surrounded themselves not with bitterness, but with layers of protection that included a trusty guard dog and a vigilant security system aiming to prevent the past from repeating itself. The community sought to keep Kimberly's legacy alive, in a manner reflective of the kind of person she was. The Kimberly Cates Memorial Scholarship Fund, fueled by an annual golf tournament, became a beacon of her enduring spirit. It was a kind of communal saying, from the deepest tragedies can sprout seeds of unity and hope. Jamie herself turned her ordeal into a motivator for doing good, diving into a career in healthcare, a sector synonymous with her mother's nurturing essence. With the poise and determination of someone who has seen the darkest, yet chooses to focus on the light, Jamie exemplifies resilience, embodying the spirit of survival and the power to forge ahead. Thus, as the rusty bars close behind those responsible for such an unfathomable act, and the Cates family pushes forward, we reflect on the deeply woven fabric of consequence, recovery, and remembrance that follows any verdict. Our legal system provides a semblance of closure, yet for the victims and their loved ones, life goes on in a perpetual pursuit of peace and healing. As we reach towards the close of this story, it's essential to remember that while the night of October 4, 2009, introduced unthinkable horror into the lives of Kimberly and Jamie Cates, the legacy left by Kimberly is one of light, not darkness. Kimberly Cates was much more than a victim. She was a shining presence in her community, a woman whose life was characterized by her caring nature and energetic spirit. Then there's Jamie. Resilience seems too simple a word to describe the strength she's shown in rebuilding her life. Following in her mother's footsteps, Jamie Cates chose a path of healing and care by entering the healthcare field. The guard dog by their side and the renewed trust in their security measures, the Cates family looked forward and persisted, their courage a beacon to all touched by their story. For more about this and all of our episodes, check out our True Crime Bedtime Stories Instagram and TikTok accounts. Join us next time for True Crime Bedtime Stories. Until then, sleep tight.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there. especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.